Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 366. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning, Steve.
And Phil Wilson.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Tim.
Hey, good sounds kind of formal.
So how was your walk yesterday?
We're doing sort of a Sunday morning format now.
Yeah, right.
You were involved in the big walk or run or whatever it was.
Actually, yeah. The Pano Prague.
Pano Prague.
We really should broadcast the Minivate Gang podcast from there sometime, since it is the panorama of progress.
Indeed.
Oh, really?
Podcast. No, oh, never mind.
So what was it? Was it a fundraiser? Or?
No, it was just, Pano Prague is just our 4th of July celebration here in Minneapolis.
Something to do.
It's a panorama of progress. Come on.
The panorama of progress. It started in, 69, I believe, to sort of celebrate the growth of Lakeville at the time. And so it's been a long week of fun stuff. I appreciate everybody allowing us to move the podcast a day. So I actually participated in my first ever 4-mile run.
Wow.
And I'm happy to say I ran over 3 of it. I did some walking, but I did complete it.
Oh, God.
That's good.
Yeah, I started running again about 3.5 weeks ago. So I don't think I've actually run for exercise or sport since I believe I was in cross country in junior high school. I believe that was the last time I actually ran. So, so it was interesting. It was an interesting, exciting, somewhat painful, but rewarding experience. So thanks for that. So
cool. Well, on a not cool side.
Of course, while I was doing that sort of thing, more police shootings and technology playing a part in those police shootings these days.
The Facebook live streaming that was done. So I would say probably most people did not see it live, obviously, unless they were friends with the woman that was with Philando Castile's girlfriend. But saw the recording after the fact.
Sure.
But, being able to live stream, it means that somebody can't grab your phone and it's on your phone. It's already out in the world.
Right.
And so.
I don't know if I would have had the presence of mind to not only pull out the phone and start live streaming, but also, start narrating the thing and it looked pretty like she wasn't that concerned about stuff.
Well, I think that, first and foremost, we live in a bit of a different world. There's not the constant need for us to justify and prove our point of view simply because we are white.
Yeah.
I think in the minority communities, there is always the constant doubt because there does exist in our society racism. So I think we don't think about, okay, so how am I going to prove this? I agree with you, Tim. It seemed insanely calm, insanely sort of relaxed. But
yeah, I'd be freaking out personally.
I'm sure she was on stun. Sure she was on stun. But it's also the, like a lot of people have said, I want to see what happened before that. I want to know what happened before because it's easy to read a headline and jump to a conclusion, and it's really easy to see things and jump to a conclusion. But that all said, I was really taken aback. Michelle and I were driving in the car and we're listening to NPR, and they were interviewing the police chief of, I believe, Falcon Heights, St. Anthony, I think. And he said, blah, blah, blah. And the officers were making a felony stop, blah, blah, blah. And I said, I looked at her. I went, wait a minute. It was a broken taillight.
Yeah, that's not a felony.
That's not a felony stop. I mean, come on. And so why would you characterize it as a felony stop? I didn't get that. There's a lot of information that's still got to come out on this thing. But
everyone has a cell phone that can do this now.
Right.
And we've had several other high profile police brutality incidents that have been recorded one way or the other. Now it's being live streamed, but before it was just being recorded and they made it to the internet. You'd think that police would be on high alert that this kind of thing is going to happen. But this continues every day. There's some other incident like this.
Right.
Well, I think that that's a discussion that's sort of starting now. Is will police be more hesitant in executing their job because they're not sure,
you know, what's being recorded?
Well, and also though. Recorded. Yep. Well, also the body cams for police are being less pushed back against. The establishment, you know, the officers often didn't want to have that, and you know, but first it was dash cams and then squads, and then now body cams and so on, and you know, it's a way to ensure that you know you're getting things from all sides, and so it's going to be real interesting. This certainly smacks of shooting that should not have happened.
Well,
but again,
no one deserves to die over a tail light. Come on.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's another piece and you know, I may come across as somewhat screaming liberal here, but at the same time, there's a piece that's not being talked about here. And that is the impact that, the proliferation of guns in our society has had.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about the fact that, and you can't blame police for necessarily being on ultra high alert, because the citizenry is somewhat outgunning them. I mean, these guys are on very much high alert. Now, I think that I think you get this cocktail of open carry. You get this the racism issues, and then you've got the camera issues. I mean, all kind of come together to make somewhat of a volatile little cocktail. So I think that that's another thing that I know isn't being talked about now, but should be talked about, because I think that has an impact.
It gets talked about enough, though. That's a whole nother kettle of fish. So that has really nothing to do with this particular.
I disagree.
Well, I don't think that the cop thought that this guy was going to shoot him, although he had a concealed.
Yes, gun. He did. He said
it was legal. It was a legal concealed gun.
Yes, but he was.
He disclosed it.
He was concerned that the guy was reaching for his gun. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what his story. I don't. Yeah. There's plenty more that needs to be uncovered here. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all right, kids. I clearly don't think it's mutually exclusive.
But Julio's story here got me thinking that you know, Steve Jobs' legacy, and everyone thinks it's going to be the invention of the personal computer, but I think it's, you know, the really championing this portable computer that's in your pocket that can do all this stuff, and this is one of the most powerful things that you know, that we've seen. It's really changing society.
Yeah.
Well, it's clear proof that it holds up. This sort of thing has been going on for centuries, years, and the thing that's new is the camera.
Yeah, oversight.
Operation of your camera. Yeah.
All right. For something completely different.
Yes, let's move on with technology. There's actually, this is something I became aware of some time ago. It's called Documentary. It's the story of tech in Minnesota, and it's going to be released at the Minnesota Cup right after the event on September 22nd. And so I wrote a post about it because they sent out emails to all of us who had signed up for email alerts some time ago. And, you know, we all know most of the people, if not all of them in this video. And even though some of the B-roll footage is old and some of even the interview stuff is old, it's right on, old meaning about a year old, but it's on point. And my belief is that something like this, you know, I'll have to see it first before I can pronounce this firm, but something like this is going to really help to tell the story that Minnesota is a place where technology is accelerating and developers are here and startups are here and venture capitalists are here. And it's a great community to build a startup.
So that's good.
Yeah.
That sounds like Minnovate the movie to me.
Right. Yeah, we should make Minnovate the movie. We'll make Graham Thickens the villain because he's not here anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He could have like a handlebar mustache.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's
Snidely Whiplash.
Snidely Whiplash.
That's right. Yeah, there you go.
Well, and then our startup here, Lead Pages, just bought a marketing tech company. And Tim, you're the marketing guru on our on our podcast. And so did you know of this company that they acquired?
No, I've never heard of it.
Okay.
Drip.
Drip is the
from
name
Fresno.
Of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was like a fairly small little company. It only had 1,500 customers. So I think they may have got this one early.
Yep.
Yeah, it could very well be.
It appears so. Mm-hmm.
Well, so they're...
That's good to see a local company, though, expand through acquisition.
Well, and not only that, but, you know, to look at the potential that they're going to be able to get out in front of, you know, the snippet world. So, you know, you see something and then you want to be able to drip content out and, you know, continue bringing people in and so it could be good.
Yeah.
I have to find out more about this company.
It will add to their capability. So that's right. Always good.
Yep. Well, and then some more Minnesota news. Target, their CIO, Mike McNamara, did an interview.
With Forbes.
With
very long interview, yeah.
Sorry about the autoplay video. It was really an interesting article. And the punchline for me was really about focusing on tech innovation and the sort of things that they're doing with innovation. I'm not going to go through the whole thing. I think it's worth a read.
Yeah, check it out.
To really understand what Target's up to. And I think this new CEO and his team are doing a great job.
Seem to be. I was down at Red Wing, also some more retail stuff. Am I to read this right, Tim? I think you put this link in. Am I to read this right that they're basically developing websites for their partners as well? Red Wing Shoes is.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. A bunch of microsites.
Okay.
Right.
Gotcha.
Which I thought was an interesting, you know, kind of approach, and you wouldn't think of it with something like a Red Wing Shoes, but it makes complete sense.
Well, here's why. So one of my fraternity brothers from college, Bill Sweezy, his great-grandfather started Red Wing Shoes, and he was CEO for quite a while until he retired, and early, I should add. But, you know, Red Wing Shoes, one of the big keys to Red Wing Shoes is their unbelievable distribution everywhere in the world. And they're a protected line, so they don't sell to mass merchants anywhere in the world. And you know, they're not cheap shoes, but man, I tell you, people swear by them. Mm-hmm. And even the hipsters now in multiple countries have begun buying and wearing Red Wing shoes. And I thought that their direction would be to build microsites for their resellers, for their dealers. But that's not what they're doing. So I don't, you know, Schlumberger is this gigantic company. Well, I'm wondering if this is just a microsite for approved Schlumberger workers' boots, and the workers can then buy them on the site.
Yeah. So that what they're doing is they're looking at their customer base, and they're trying to customize their e-commerce to make it easier for those customers to directly buy them.
Got it. So it's really a focused customer strategy, not a distributor or a retailer type strategy. Okay.
Yeah, this is one of the trades that I look at every day, and it was interesting to see a local company pop up with an innovative idea like this.
It is.
So.
Huh.
It's very, very.
It's a little bit inside baseball for e-commerce, but, you know, they are a local legend.
It's really good to think of, though, because we just got developing a site for a company that's got international affiliates all over the world, and each one of the affiliates wanted to have their own site, but the company wanted to brand it, so just put in a WordPress multi-site platform and have begun cloning the current site, and then they can go in and they can change all the content. And it's working pretty well.
Yep.
So
that is a good solution.
Only three of them so far, but it's key because everybody wants their own capability and footprint. So
that's right.
So were there any other tech stories this week?
Well, what about that Jupiter probe?
Yeah. That was pretty big tech. Yeah, I know. I know that. I know this started 5 years ago, but
yeah.
I think you can't talk about technology without just at least giving a nod to the Juno entering Jupiter's orbit, which was again launched 5 years ago and has finally gotten into orbit. But check that out. There's whole sorts of interesting things that will be coming out of that. I'm sure we'll get a nice up close look at another planet.
Well, and to jump over a story a little bit, I'll tie this one in with the Apple TV getting the NASA app.
Yeah.
So if you're into that, you can stream the NASA TV.
Yes.
Oh, can you? I have that app. I just haven't looked at it on the. They're going to be streaming this the footage that they're capturing.
No. It's the app is now the NASA app is now on Apple TV.
It's on the Apple TV.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll move that one up.
Okay.
Since they seemed somewhat related.
Yeah,
I think so.
Who knows if the Juno thing? I would imagine so, though, right?
How live can it be? I guess.
It will be very.
How long does it take a signal to get back from Jupiter?
Probably it's a long time because if you remember from The Martian, it took several minutes for the. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stuff to come back from the surface of Mars.
Listen to us. A long time is now minutes.
Yeah.
Well, but it's probably half an hour, I would think.
Well, just remember, though, IBM is working on, I'm sure others are as well, working on quantum communication capability, because when particles are entangled, the twin particle instantaneously, the spooky action over distance, as Einstein said, changes instantly like the other particles. So in theory, you could have real time, no latency communication if it was quantum based communication, which would be awesome. So it'll be, maybe there won't be any lag and it'll be instantaneous. We'll be able to have, VR bots on Mars, and you'll be able to rent it and go around with goggles and look around Mars and pick stuff up. And
Wait, reel him back, Tim. We're losing him.
He's gone. Are you on Wi-Fi, Phil?
No, I am not. I switched off of Wi-Fi. I realized I was on Wi-Fi, but I apologize. Am I having some issues?
Yeah, you're breaking up just a little bit. It's like the packet loss thing.
So. It must be the run. I'm tired.
Right.
But sometimes, Steve, I feel like we need to get you a chalkboard. We got to get a chalkboard on this program. So.
Oh, no.
Okay.
It'll sort of be like the techie Glenn Beck, right?
There you go.
Please don't. No.
Please don't ever compare him.
Yeah, if you're going to do a comparison.
I can think of
somebody else.
Don't say Rush Limbaugh.
See, John Stewart. John Stewart would work.
There you go.
Yeah,
well, there you go.
He doesn't have a chalkboard. Well, whatever.
On occasion, he does.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, so what do you make of this Audible doing charging for podcasts? Sort of.
Well, the article is in the New York Times. Amazon's Audible goes long on short form audio, and I don't really believe that their focus is podcasts. I think their focus is, things like short stories. And. Yep. Content that they would actually create or have created by specific authors and so forth, or just take things that are already exist. So here's what I equated this to, and when you put the, you must have put this in, Tim, or
yep, I did.
So what I equated it to, I haven't been in a Barnes & Noble for a year. And my wife had to go in and buy some magazines for work that have pictures of certain things, home furnishings. And so I said, yeah, let's go. And so I'm walking around Barnes & Noble, and they have that whole section of books, many of which are in the public domain, and others, like Sherlock Holmes and so forth, that they've rebound or bound in nice leather and gold lettering and all of that, and they're selling that as content. You can buy a Sherlock Holmes compendium for $5, and it's got a leather cover, and et cetera, et cetera. And this is all, the profit on these books is incredible. And I looked at this Audible strategy as being the same kind of thing, where they're taking content that may already exist, and may even be public domain kinds of things, and laying it out and as short form audio, and then you
Well, there is a thing in at Amazon in the print world that's these shorts, and you know, I think they're 99 cents, most of them, and they're basically self-contained, you know, books that are very short, so you can sit down and in 45 minutes read the whole thing.
Yeah,
and this seems to be the audio counterpart to that, where people have a shorter attention span, and maybe instead of listening to a book that might be 8 or 10 hours long, they would listen to something that's, you know, 45 minutes or so, or 30 minutes.
Well, have you ever really spent any time at Project Gutenberg?
Yep. Yep.
So now they've got...
When I'm getting my Jules Verne fix, that's where I go.
Well, yeah, so they've got over 50,000 free ebooks, EPUB and Kindle, and they've also got .mobi. You know, they've got all kinds of different formats. This is the one that I put together 100 books in multiple formats for that school in Thailand when we were doing the whole book donation thing. I was gathering books for them. But there are people that do, they read public domain works and they record them as audiobooks. So you can download the audiobooks and some of them are really good. Some of them are not, and I don't really like the books that are read by, you know, there's 20 chapters and there's 20 different voiceovers. You know,
you'll find that a lot at LibriVox, which is the
public
domain book podcast place.
Yep, yep.
I'll stick a link down here so you can put it in the notes. But that's the one drawback is, and some of the readers are really good, and some of them aren't.
Well, and there's a guy from the UK who does book reading, and people just love this guy. And I do, too. I think he's just great. I can't remember his name now. I'll see if I can find it here. But he is, he should be a professional, but he just loves doing this for Project Gutenberg.
Hmm.
So, just giving it away for free.
Yep.
Which is cool. Amazon Prime Day is coming, boys.
I know. Oh,
hold me back.
Aren't you going to buy?
The question is, will this be a good deal, or would this be another house cleaning crap from Amazon?
You know, that's a good question.
I don't know.
They typically, if you go there, like the first hour of the first day, there's typically deals, you know, but they'll have like 6 great deals on a Samsung TV and there's only 6 of them in stock, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
But Phil, you know, there's going to be the Amazon Echo.
Well, I don't need the Echo.
You know, you're going to get a second chance at that.
I want to get the Dot. I don't want to get the Echo. So.
Oh.
Why the Dot?
Because I don't need the Echo. I don't need the whole big honking speaker thing. I've got a Bluetooth speaker I can use.
So. Okay.
The Dot, just it's less expensive and less obtrusive. And I think that's what I would use it for.
Well, don't you have to touch it, though?
No. I don't.
Oh, so it works. So it's just, you plug it into your speakers.
Yeah. It's basically, the Dot is just the top half of Echo. I mean, it doesn't claim to be a speaker.
Well, so what's the difference between the Dot and the Tap?
The Tap is the speaker, the Bluetooth speaker.
Right. But in the Tap, you have to actually push.
But I don't think it's, as I recall, isn't it just a nice Bluetooth speaker? I don't think it does.
Well, it's got a microphone.
Yeah, no, it does the whole Amazon Echo thing. So you can ask for the weather or play music or whatever.
Okay.
But you have to, you have to hold down the button. So it's sort of like Siri in that regard.
Hmm. There you go.
Okay. Well.
Huh. Okay. Well, we'll keep an eye out for that.
Yep.
But it's a big thing. There's a lot of counter programming that's going on from other competitors to Amazon for this. So
yes, there are.
You know, so it is a thing. It's sort of like Christmas in July.
Maybe.
They were going for.
Well, that's what they were going for, but they ended up, you know, all sorts of crappy things like, I don't know, facial blotters and you know, stupid stuff was on sale. So.
Huh.
We mocked it openly last year.
We did. You're right. But I have to mention here that in this article at the top there, they have some of the early deals, and this the Polaroid Cube camera that Julio likes so much is only $65. That's a hot screaming deal.
Huh. Well, I have to tell you guys about something, and I didn't put anything in the show notes, but my son is at the U, and he's talking to two of his buddies in one of his classes. He's taken some summer classes because he wants to finish in the fall, and one of the guys goes, "Hey, did you ever play Pokemon when you were a kid?" And he goes, "Yeah." You've got to download Pokemon Go.
Go, yeah.
I know. And
the augmented reality thing. Well, so here he is. He works at Costco on the weekends. And so he's coming back from Costco at like, 8:10 last night because he's off at 8. And he sees three guys that he knows in the parking lot at the park on the way home. And he pulls in there and here all of them are. He goes, "Hey, what are you guys doing?" And he goes, "Hey, we're doing Pokemon Go." They were doing the thing because I don't know enough about the game, but apparently the Pikachus or whatever they got to gather were somebody had seated them in the park and they were going around getting them. And it's just, I mean, it's like frightening how many people have been buzzing about this game.
Well, I think one of the most recent stories that I saw posted in tech was Australia is passing some rules about, asking Pokemon Go players to pay more attention because they're spending so much time looking at their phone, trying to see the Pokemon Go avatar that they can catch or piece that they can catch. Again, my naivete about what the game is all about, but it's all VR. So they have to look at the screen and they're running into things.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and you saw the thing about somebody was doing it and a Wyoming teen stumbled on a dead body while playing Pokemon Go.
No, I didn't see
that. Yeah.
That seems like a PR plant to me,
Could be.
I don't know, but she was
native advertising. There it is.
Yeah. Yeah. But she found a dead body floating in her hometown river in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. She was just walking along and doing her augmented reality
thing.
It
could happen. You're right.
Yeah.
Just be those coincidence.
Kids, those wacky kids in their games, right?
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the cool things of the week. Anybody up for that? Let's start with Steve. Steve seems to have something that he's anxious to talk about.
Yes, I am. I have been highly reluctant to go out and spend money on a camera, but I do these Steve's road trips, try to do it every year. And,
I believe that's a trademark name. I believe.
Yes. Steve's road trip. Yes. It is. Registered trademark. Registered. I would bet a month researching cameras, and I already own Nikon lenses and stuff. So obviously I'm leaning toward Nikon, but I was looking at the Sony a7 R2, I was looking at even the Sony A6300 and all of these various iterations of the camera. The things that I really wanted, though, were low light so that I would be able, low ISO, so I'd be able to have relatively noise-free ambient light photos and even take them handheld. And this camera meets that. But it also does 4K video with all the DSLR limitations with 4K video, but it is awesome.
Awesome.
This camera, this is the best camera I've ever owned. And my buddy Eric and I went out and flew his drone yesterday, and I took the camera out and was just taking shots, snapshotty. I mean, not highly composed. Came back, put them on my computer, and I mean, I was just drop jawed at the quality of these shots. I mean, it was just, oh my God. So I am just in heaven. Now, the downside always is, we went to Italy. I took this little Sony RX100 M2 camera, and the M3's out now, and you throw it in your pocket, and it takes phenomenal photos. But you can't, I mean, the zoom is 20x, and it's just not that great, and, the aperture's small, and it doesn't do well in low light, and so there are all these shots in museums that I just couldn't get. So I am so pumped. I can't stand myself. So I've been out taking pictures like mad. So that's my cool thing.
That's cool. A little sidebar, a little over 20 years ago, when I was at Kodak, we introduced the DCS series of cameras, which are built on top of Canon cameras. Or actually, the first ones were built on Nikon. Then they switched to Canon. But anyway, it was 16 megapixels and it was $25,000. That was 22, 23 years ago. And this is a 20.9 megapixel camera for $2,000.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Well, that's the body. You know, if anybody was interested in a camera like this, I mean, right now is the time to buy cameras because Nikon, for example, has rebates on all their lenses. The reason I bought this one is they came out with a 16 to 80 millimeter kit, a lens, and they created a kit. And the lens was, I don't know, $200 off or something with a kit. And so, I mean, it just, and there's lens rebates on, and others are having rebates on their cameras because they want to sell a lot of cameras in the summer. This is the peak. And so now is a great time if you guys have any interest in buying a decent camera. And, you know, I got some pushback from one of my sisters who said, you spent how much on a camera?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, but,
You know, you got one in your iPhone, right?
Yeah, right. And I said, well, okay, so, you know, a tricycle will get me from here to the grocery store, but I'd much rather take a car. You know, ooh. I'm still going to get there, but that's the difference. I mean, the difference in the quality is just beyond comprehension in comparison to any device. And, of course, the best camera that everybody says, well, so what's the best camera that I should look at? It's like, well, the best camera is the one you've got with you.
That's right. Know?
Exactly right.
And sometimes it's not the best camera either, but
that's true. That's true.
All right, Tim.
Tim.
So we talked about this this chip $9 computer way back when it first came out. It was on Kickstarter, but I saw this week, and it's called the Pocket Chip. I think it's about $50, and it basically takes the $9 chip. A computer, and it sticks it in a little pocket case with a little keyboard, and makes it a fun little project for I would say your kid maybe is into this kind of stuff. And in this thing, they're running game emulators, so you can run games on it. It's a nice little thing to do with these little pocket computers.
So there's a display.
Yes, there's a little display. It's a touchscreen little display, but you can operate it with the keyboard as well. If you look at the picture in there, and there's a little video that shows how it works. It's a nice little thing, and for $50 or less, you've got a little handheld gaming device that you build yourself.
You know what really got me into? There are two things that got me into radio and voice and all that kind of stuff. One was building a crystal radio kit with a kid in the neighborhood, and the other was getting a reel-to-reel tape recorder, a cheap one when I was 14.
A Wolenstock?
No. I wish it would have been that good a quality. No, it was, I don't know what it was, but anyway.
It was an Emerson.
Yeah, I just remember my mom and dad getting really mad, though, because I put it under their bed one night. When they were in there talking and I was recording.
Wow, that's
just...
That was not good.
Sort of a precursor to Steve's obsession with security.
Security, yeah. No, they weren't doing anything. They were just talking. You know.
Sure they were.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, how funny. Phil, what's yours, buddy boy?
Well, this is... I know I kind of lean towards the things that actually exist in the real world, but I thought this was just so cool. It is just a prototype right now. There's no Kickstarter, anything like that. This is called the Spectre. And I also noticed when you put it on Cool Thing of the Week in our notes, guys, it says Phil Spectre.
Says Phil colon Spectre.
That's true. Yes. which is it's described as the Shazam for fonts.
It'll identify the font.
Yeah, it'll identify the font on a printed page or a screen or something like that.
Sweet.
I think it's so cool. It will also help identify colors. So if you're a designer trying to find that right font and you see a font you like but you have no idea what it is, this is the perfect thing. You just place this piece over the top of it. It sort of takes a picture of it, I guess, and you track down what the font is. It's a very cool concept, and I thought it was perfect for Cool Thing of the Week. So there it is.
Well, you know what's interesting about this? Two things. One is on my Retina iMac, I've got a extension for Chrome that allows me to pull a color from a web page.
Right.
And so I pulled, we were looking up Pantone chip colors. I was helping Michelle with a presentation. And I pulled the color from the chip itself. And the hex code that it gave me back was the exact hex code for the chip itself, you know, because Pantone will put their RGB and CMYK and lab and hex code designations for that specific color. And so, A, that's how accurate this display is on this Retina iMac. But B, Apple is really moving forward because it's in my new iPad Pro, but they're going to do the same thing apparently with Macs and with phones going forward, which is that true color capability in the devices. So that's been our biggest pain, is we've never been able to do digital color palettes for anyone because the representation of color varies so dramatically by screen and device type that there's no way you can say this is the exact orange that you should look at.
Agreed.
And so this is cool that there's a device like this that you can say, yeah, hey, here's a real world. You know, it's like a pocket spectrophotometer, really.
It is.
So
that's why they call it the Spectre, I bet.
You're so good. Ooh, Tim.
Wow. Nothing gets by Tim.
No.
What's coming up for events? Obviously, this week is sort of packed with some good things. We've got a mini demo coming up on Thursday night. Am I correct on that?
You are.
Mobile Twin is, we're hosting Mobile Twin Cities on Tuesday night as well.
And so what are you going to, what's the talk there?
Mobile Twin Cities, we're talking about instant apps from Android, and then also Casey Helbling from Software for Good will be talking a little bit about showcasing the Pride app, but also talking a little bit more about other Software for Good projects. So
gotcha.
You can come out and check it out. So
good. Yeah, and then the other stuff we've talked about.
Yeah. So there you go.
Good.
And so we'll talk about that next week on
the Minovate Gang Podcast.
See you then.
Take care.
Man, oh.